What is happening, team? Welcome to another episode of Anabolic Radio, joined by Dirk Emmerich, WNBF lightweight champion of the world. How are you doing today, Dirk? How does it feel to finally hear that? I'm sure you've been on, you know, multiple podcasts and they've introduced you as such.
Thank you for having me, Ishak. So, no, man, doing great. Doing very good. Now it's already like 16 weeks post-prep. It's crazy how time flies. And no, doing great. Doing great, man.
60 weeks post-prep. Has it been that long?
16 weeks, yeah.
16. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Time flies, huh? Months.
Yeah, it flies. It goes like, especially bodybuilding time is always so quick. When we are 16 weeks out, 16 weeks post-prep, it's like goes by so quick. It's crazy sometimes.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. How's the transition been from contest season into this current off season?
I would say amazing, like a way better transitioning than my first prep in 21, where I would say like the transitioning from a prep to a off season is always very telling of how efficient the prep was overall. Let's say when the transitioning is very rough, like you have like all those hormonal issues for like months going on, all of that is often also a sign, even though we get shredded, it's like maybe there's some things we could have done better during the prep. And this one was definitely like, I think like after 4 or 5 weeks, I was like feeling okay, now I'm normal again, I feel great. So this was like a very good thing. But also like Alberto and me, we really paced ourselves this prep, so I think we had a very good starting position and then like really like letting it come to us. And also from a mental perspective, like I was chill for the most time and like not having that like hyper focus, which I think also translated of like, yeah, getting there with the least amount of stress possible at the end. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great points. And I'm sure we will dive into your or details about your recent competition season. But for some of the audience and some of the people who are not familiar with you, would you like to give them a little bit of an intro?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, as a quick intro, like my background is from parkour. So I was doing parkour back in the days from like 12 to 16, got injured, had to stop. And then I directly, decided to do bodybuilding. And I started with 17 years old back in 2012, started off with calisthenics. And then I was like, hey, I was really falling in love with like the bodybuilding aspect of things of like basically, yeah, getting a better physique. All of that, and then was transitioning to the gym. Yeah, from there I was training for like, I think it was 8 years before I did my first ever contest prep in 21. So eight to nine years. Yeah. So yeah, and from there I was doing my first ever contest prep back in 21 with Alberto Nunes, coached by him since 2016. So I was also like having a coach now for quite a long time. And yeah, and this was a very interesting season where I got like a little bit ready early. There came that nickname for me, like Mr. Ready Too Early, where I got like 10 weeks out. I was already very lean. And I think this was a thing of like, hey, like a genetic thing, but then also like, yeah, with COVID and all that. So we got like planned to be ready a little earlier than usual. And yeah, so this was a very good season where I won very phenomenal season actually, like where I won my WNBF Pro Card at Worlds and then also the overall title at the amateur ranks in 21. And then I did a 2-year off season until last year where I did my pro debut also at WNBF Worlds, where I won the pro lightweight world champion title, which was amazing. Just 16 weeks ago, like again, time flies. So yeah, this is, I would say, like a quick introduction. I'm now 29 years old. So again, started with 17. So yeah, take some time with bodybuilding, a lot of patience and that's why also I would like to mention like my first season was quite successful because I already trained like for 9 years. Where it's like, if you train for like 3-4 years, like it's almost impossible to earn a pro card, except you're like the 0.0.0.1% of elite genetic gifted guys, but very unlikely usual. So that's like some context in regards to that as well, I would say.
Great points. And I think it says a lot about your ability to practice patience and delayed gratification. I mean, you were training for 8 to 9 years before your first serious competition season. And before that, you've had a coach 5 years before your first competition season. So I think that says a lot. And it is a true testament or statement to the fact that the stage is always going to be there. So it's really about understanding some of the reasons as to why you're competing. Are you competing just to, you know, go on stage and say you competed? And if that's your goal, more power to you. But are you trying to compete and distinguish yourself from the other competitors on the stage? So I think that's a very important thing for a lot of athletes to think about. And I think as coaches ourselves, we sort of already kind of have that preemptive thinking for our athletes, because of course we want to see them do well. And so when it comes to some of the qualities that allow someone to be successful within a competition prep, what would you say some of those qualities are?
Some of the qualities, like what you already mentioned, I would say patience is a very big one, what can be pretty much practice within the off season as well, because very often the case, especially when you do when someone does their first ever prep, it's like chasing that weight loss, like there's no patience, where it's very natural to us, like let's have a new low, or also in the off season it's like, let's say, like chasing like progression too much, to the point where like our execution suffers so much, to the point we're doing like a total different movement. So we can practice that kind of patience within the off season, and a lot of the skills we can actually practice within the off season and then translate them basically into prep. So I would say, like, yeah, patience is a big one. Then as well, I would say, yeah, pain tolerance is also a big one, and I think this gets better where we can practice that a lot is like within fat loss phases. That's why I would always recommend like having at least two or three fat loss phases before doing the first ever prep, to get the practice in of having, I would call it like suffering pain tolerance, of like tapping into it and knowing that this is basically part of the process. And usually the first time when I did my first ever cut, I was a little overwhelmed of like, yeah, it's like, I'm not used to that, like suffering, like or being hungry or like feeling low energy. It's like something we can definitely can get better. And I think a big part why a lot of people, they after each season getting better and better, because they also get a better like pain tolerance, basically, because they know exactly what happens, and we are more able to deal with it, I would say. So that is also a big one. And yeah, and besides, yeah, patience, I would say this one. And yeah, I would say this is like the main points. And then basically keeping like all the routines, all the habits, what we have established in the off season within the prep going, like there's not really like much things changing. So that's why I wouldn't like really put on a switch, like some people often put on a switch. Oh, now it's prep mode, now I need to be serious, now I need to have my habits, my routine, all of that. But it should be like that, obviously not to that super high focus extent in the off season, but the groundwork should be done there. And then within prep, it's basically we do all the same, but just eating less.
You should have already been serious with it.
Yes, yes, exactly. I think this is a big one. Yeah.
I think that's a great point. You should be serious with it, but you should also be not so serious with it at the same time.
Yeah, that is the fine line of like chasing it, but also not chasing it at the same time. Like, it's a fine art, I feel. Like, still like being chill at the same time, kind of, but being serious about it. Yeah.
Great like, point. And I think going back and looking over your previous competition season in 2021, and then we've had like, you know, DM exchanges. I think we started following each other like late 2022 or something like that. After my last prep, I think that was the biggest thing that I probably picked up through our conversations, was just trying to stay chill about it, right? And my 2022 prep, a lot of things went wrong and I wasn't able to stay as chill, but that's something I'm definitely practicing this prep, and things have been smooth sailing. So I think that's very important, and I think a ton of people can take some valuable gems away from that. It's also similar to like you're super focused on trying to achieve a goal, but at the same time, you have a certain level of detachment that's associated with you getting that goal, right?
Exactly. Like, this is basically like why also like up here, the mental part plays a big role, I would say, in every sport, but especially within bodybuilding, where it's like not being emotionally attached to it. Like, obviously, if we lose, we always a little upset, but we shouldn't be like super one down. And it's like the fine art of like, yeah, like also being fine if we lose or don't get there, which makes us a little more chill. And I think like that hyper focus comes if we are so attached to it, like we put all our self-worth, everything onto that goal, where it's like, if we don't achieve it, we are like, we have like, yeah, a low self-worth, whatever it is. And having that detachment, I think, makes us quite chill. And I think that's a very healthy view with basically everything in life, to like not be too emotionally attached to something.
Remain stoic.
Yeah, that is one thing. Yeah, totally.
Great points. Okay, so when it comes to looking at your 2021 season, where you went pro, versus your recent season in 2023, where you took the lightweight title, world champion, what would you say some of the biggest differences between those preps were?
The biggest difference is, I would say, the previous prep was even more chill mentally than my 21 prep. I was more nervous. Obviously, like the first time, there's some nervousness of like knowing what happens, like not knowing what happens. And then the stage, like you don't know how it feels like to be on stage. But it's like, hey, like driving a car and then driving it the second, third time, we know exactly like what kinds of happens. And this made me like way more chill. I know exactly like more or less what how I need to look at like 10 weeks out, 8 weeks out, and so on, or like how long it takes me from this point to be like 100% shredded, which makes us very chill. But at my first prep, I was like, I don't know, like how long does it take me from here now? No idea. And yeah, I would say this was like a big difference. And then also starting prep a little bit later, like in 21, I started in May and the last one in July. So basically like 8 weeks later to like land the plane at the exact time where we wanted to land it. So this is, I would say the main changes when it comes to that. And also training wise, I was training 5 days a week in my last prep, and now I went down to 4 days, where I feel it had an impact on my recovery to some extent as well. Because on my first prep, I remember I lost a lot of enjoyment for the gym. Like training felt like so bad, but my previous prep training felt still, it felt very hard at some point, but I still had fun. Where in my first prep, I lost a lot of enjoyment for it, but the last one, I kept that fun part basically in, which, what was a big win for me. Yeah.
I love that. Making sure it's fun throughout the entire process is really important, because the process is, of course, not easy. And so transitioning out of your recent prep 2023 into your current off season, you are contest prepping this season to defend that lightweight title, right?
That is the plan. Yeah. It's not the main motivation for me. The main thing for me is like that part one is like, Puan Leong from Hong Kong is competing as well this year. And we are very good friends, and we just want to compete against each other because we're like the same height, the same weight class, all of that. So this would be like a fun thing. Maybe Alberto is also planning to compete this year again. So it would be amazing to stand up there with my coach. And I like to see what's possible within 1 year. Like, I'm very curious. Like, there's often the saying, oh, as a natural bodybuilder, you can't progress much if you compete back to back because your hormones don't recover, all of that. And I want to see, like, what is actually possible. So seeing that as a little experiment for myself.
I'm excited to watch along, right? A lot of people, I think when it comes to natural bodybuilding, one, a lot of people don't understand what the body is capable of naturally with the right protocols when it comes to your nutrition or training, or they underestimate what they're capable of achieving. So when it comes to setting limits on what you're able to achieve, being realistic is just as important with some of those goals. But what are some things you like to think about, or just run us through your train of thought when it comes to some of the limitations that people self-impose on themselves?
Oh, that is a big one, especially within natural bodybuilding. I think nowadays it's like better than like, let's say 5 or 10 years ago, where everyone believed like, oh, that's a fake natty if he's like somewhat looking decent. But now are people, I think, more accepting with that. But there's still a little bit of that, yeah, limiting thing of like, yeah, once you like at this stage of advancement, you can't progress any further, or you can't do that, or you can't train that hard, you can't do this and that, like so many limitations sometimes. And I think it's very individual. I think we need to know ourselves, what are our limits, and that is so individual. Like competing back to back, I think not everyone can do that. Like I think that's also like a big genetic component. If there's someone with like a much higher set point and had such a hard time getting there, if they would compete directly again next year, probably not a smart idea. And the same thing of like, you can even see it with training. Like, let's say if you compare bodybuilding, powerlifting, like some people can train extremely heavy, having no injuries whatsoever. Then someone like me, for instance, if I go super crazy heavy on some stuff, working with the 1, 2, 3 rep range, my joints can't really stand that. So there I know my limit. But then for someone else, for them it would be fine. So I think that is an important part as well, where we like basically knowing like ourselves a lot, and yeah, and like not putting like limits to ourselves on ourselves, where we maybe hear other people saying it, saying, oh, that's not possible. It might be for some person, but maybe not for you. That's like how I like to see it.
Knowing your limits is really important, and just as important as knowing your limits is not succumbing to the fact or being a victim to your genetics or what you think is possible. Challenge yourself, set those lofty goals. But what's important is you optimize what you're doing so you can achieve your desired outcome. And optimization has become a big buzzword in the industry. But all I'm simply saying, or what I mean by saying that, is you need to individualize what you're doing with your training. That goes all the way down to your exercise selection, your exercise sequence, how much volume you're doing per muscle group per week. And then that's the training side of things. You have to individualize what you're doing on the nutrition side of things. You have to plan out these phases where you're sitting around maintenance to a conservative surplus and you're focused on making those improvements within your training performance, right? And then you have to go through a couple successful diets if you have these lofty goals for yourself. So it's important to look at things from a bird's eye view, or try to take the bigger picture of things. And Dirk, for yourself, what is your current nutrition looking like? How has that transition been from contest season to where you're currently at?
Yeah, nutrition wise, it's honestly, it's so similar to my prep. The only thing I do is like just switching out what I eat. Like my routine is like similar, like the amount of like meals I eat. And it's honestly really just a thing of like switching out stuff. So right now how it's looking like is like, yeah, on like 3,000 calories roughly right now, like 3,000 calories. I'm on like 180 to 200 protein on most days, and fats and carbs I don't really track. I'm like letting them land wherever they land for the day, and having like really just focusing on the important things like the calories, the protein, foods I digest well, and spreading that across the day. So yeah, and within prep, like let's say a difference there is maybe like I add a little, like even more vegetables to my meals, or like things with like somewhat higher volume. And within off season, I have like a little bit more liquid calories, for instance, like a little bit more fruit juice or some milk, things like that, what I probably wouldn't have in my prep. So that is like the main thing how I'm doing it, and that is like, yeah, why I would say it's so important within the off season to have a structure and not really wing it too much with the with your yeah diet. Doesn't need to be like a meal plan or things, but I think just like a routine, which is the main thing,
sort of like a system that you could structure and standardize.
Exactly that, yeah, like having a system. I think that is like makes it also so easy from a nutritional side of things. When it comes to, yeah.
So given, let's say, for example, we find a system It's structured. It works for us. Are there any significant changes that you made to your nutrition outside of, let's say, for example, we take out some carbs, we take out some fats?
Let me think. I maybe put like even higher emphasis on like pre-workout nutrition, like within the prep. That is maybe like one thing I do. And besides that, there's really not too much I change. I have like my like an intra getaway usually within my off season, but even within prep. So yeah, I would say that's honestly, yeah, nothing big different about it, I would say. Yeah.
And what are some of the biggest issues that you think people make within their nutrition, whether it be off season or whether it be competition prep?
The biggest issues, I think it can be, yeah, it can be multiple things. Like, I think the first obvious thing is of like having no like really routine, like real routine. I think like it's smart to pick like foods out like that you really like to eat. Like for me, I have food in the morning. I just like having some food with honey and some protein shake in the morning. And I just rotate out the fruits, but I know every morning I have some fruit. So sometimes it's a dragon fruit with mango, then the pineapple with something. And having like that stables, I think is also quite important for people to like having your protein stables. Like it can be like, hey, just whey, chicken, salmon, things like that. Like having those stables and always like buying them like as kind of like having a routine with it and like not too often experimenting a lot. But I still believe, again, like we shouldn't be too extreme with like being so like with a meal plan, but also not to the extreme where super super hyper flexible trying to like try all different things out. And I think this can be a big issue what I sometimes see, and obviously having no structure, like no like set like meal times, or like some people have some days just one or two meals and the other day four or five meals, and having like a yeah, like a set routine within that, like anywhere between three or four meals is like what works best for me. And finding that out for someone just makes that it's a big thing. And then depending of your, if you work from home, obviously, then you can have more freedom. But if you work like in an office, it's smart to like meal prep, for instance, for your work. So this is also quite important to like stay on the, yeah, on the habit with it. So I think this can be often like to put it all in one thing is like big issue I see is like winging it too much for some people, of like not having a routine with it or a structure. So I think that's a big one.
Yeah. Great points. And I think that something that I love that you said is, you know, a lot of people have a tendency to either be too flexible and incorporate all these if it fits your macros type foods.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people try to play Tetris with their numbers to try and fit something in. And then you said on the other side of the spectrum, you know, people have a tendency to be too strict. And I think there's phases for everything, right? In the off season, like we have the ability to maybe be a little bit more flexible with things, right? Whereas within competition prep or even a dieting phase or even a mini cut, like you want to make the most out of your time spent in a deficit. So it only makes sense to have a standardized structured system that allows you to hit your protein, achieve your micronutrient minimums, and of course hit your macros, but also having a structured set routine will make it significantly easier for us as coaches, as athletes, to measure trends and predict things like your training performance. Okay, I think there's going to be a new low around the corner. Okay, you know, I didn't hit a new low. Is there something I did incorrectly with my nutrition, or did I not get enough activity in? So really standardizing your environment really sets you up for success. And I think those are fantastic points, Dirk. And to sort of just switch direction of things a bit, because we've been talking a little bit about nutrition. When it comes to the training side of things, coming off of your recent competition season to this competition season, are there any significant changes you've made to your training? Are there certain muscle groups you're looking to bring up within that time frame?
I would say big changes, like sticking to 4 days training now, like my first ever off season where I have 4 instead of 5 days, where I feel like on the recovery side of things, this helps me currently a lot, and I can even put more focus into each session where I know, okay, I just have 4 days, so I make all those 4 days count. And I look also a little bit more forward to training, where before it was sometimes a little bit with 5 days, where like sometimes that 5th day is like, could be a day where I'm like not that motivated to do it, but with 4 days it's like every session I really really look forward to, which is like it's a nice thing. And yeah, what I try to bring up, I would say, is still my arms, like the overall frame. I would say quads a little bit, arms, delts, lats, to create like even more width and density as a bantam athlete especially. So to maybe be one day like quite competitive within like also like open shows against middle and heavyweights. I believe as a bantam, I need to create like much more of that frame. So I focus on all that muscle groups where, yeah, that create basically make you look bigger, kind of like, yeah. Mm. So that is like the main focus, I would say, yeah.
So improve everything, but specifically muscle groups that make your frame more accentuated or gives you a bit more of an illusion.
Yes, exactly. That is the main thing. But yeah, everything, and primarily delts and arms, I would say. Mm. Yeah.
Mainly delts and arms, because nobody has enough arms, especially as a natural bodybuilder.
Exactly. Point, except you are Doug Miller.
Oh, that's too funny. Too funny. Okay, yeah. So when it comes to your ability to thrive, competition season, contest prep doesn't really matter. What are some things outside of having a coach and working with Berto have allowed you to thrive in those different phases?
Besides that, I would say like also mental practices. I like to meditate every morning before evening to like, it also honestly helps my training to have like also a good like mental health kind of space up there. I feel this impacts, especially on the prep, especially on the dieting side of things, where I feel like when you're like in a very good mental space, you are that much better with dealing with stress. And contest prep is also a stressful state, like for the body it's somewhat stress, and having like a good like mindset for that, like really simple, like really just meditating, things like that can help a lot, I feel, with that. And it helped with my training with many things. And no, and besides that, like I also moved to Thailand now already almost 2 years ago. So this was also a nice thing, like a different environment where I feel like even more productive, more peaceful, things like that. Where I think like having a good environment can also definitely, that helped me as well.
Mm.
Also, even within the last prep, made it a little easier, I think, even. And yeah, and besides everything, like obviously like always being curious, always learning, like I like to like read a lot about the recent literature, like the recent studies, all those things. I think that is also like a big part for sure. And then obviously like just the experience, like we get ourselves, like making kind of mental notes of that, and yeah, and getting better with those, I would say.
The original scientists before a lot of these scientific papers started to come out, I think, because what we do is pretty similar, right? We go through that trial and error process. We either make notes in our notebook or we log things in our head. And great point. So when it comes to finding a good coach, obviously, for those of you who are listening, you don't know, we've mentioned it a couple times, but Dirk obviously works with Alberto Nunez, and he's also a coach himself. So what are some qualities you could give the audience when they have the goal of physique development and they're trying to find a coach? And what are some things that Berto has that made you gravitate towards him as your coach?
Okay, like when it came, with Berto, like a big part why I, went with him back in the days was also like he walked the walk, basically. Like he got super shredded himself. He had like tons of experience, and also like from a personality perspective, he's very humble. So I would always also look out, like when it comes to coaches, like if they're also somewhat humble, like there's some people who like always shouting, seeming overly hyper confident, often the people who don't really know what they talk about, I would say. And there's some coaches out there, so I think it's always important to look out like for those traits. And after a while, like the longer we are within the industry or like, the longer you train, you can differentiate of like, okay, what is bullshit? Like, what is real? Who has true knowledge? Who doesn't? And yeah, I would say this is like, yeah, some of the big points. What was the other question again you had at the beginning?
What are some qualities for people to look for in a coach, and what made you gravitate towards Berto?
Oh, I would say, yeah, this is like, yeah, the main things I mentioned. And yeah, and obviously also like as a coach who's always like willing to learn more himself, like not being too stuck in their own ways, things like that. And I think that is like also like the main reason why I was gravitated to Alberto back in 2016. Yeah.
2016, geez.
Yeah.
This is a long time now, huh?
Eight years, yeah.
Looking back, I'm sure you're glad making that decision, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, he was my first ever coach still to that day. So, and that's also a big one. I think once you have a great coach, like, stick with him. Like sometimes there's, like, coach hopping going on where someone thinks, oh, maybe that coach is better. But if it works, like, it's like a relationship base. So similar. I feel like, hey, if it works, it works. Like, why should you look for, something else? So.
And it's not always going to be perfect from the start, you know? It takes some trial and error to find out what works for you from a programming perspective, from a communication perspective. Yeah. So I think that's
made
that's,
many mistakes.
Yeah, super important. And, I think a lot of people can oftentimes, like you said, get enticed by some of the things that they see on social media. Oh, this coach has a big following. Oh, he coaches XYZ competitor, right? While they're neglecting the real thing that will allow them to be successful, which is their knowledge. How do they talk to me? You know, will they get back to my responses relatively quickly? You know, I've heard way too many horror stories in the industry. And I'm sure you have too. And
for sure.
When it comes to your life, it sort of transitioned into different phases. So like, your first competition season around 2021, I believe you were still in Germany. You were bartending then, and now you're in Thailand.
Oh, that is also a major difference I forgot to mention. Yeah. Like in 21, like I was working as a bartender, basically. So not super crazy hours. So it was like more like a more of a chill bar where I was finished at like usually 11 p.m. So it wasn't like 3, 4 a.m. in the morning, something crazy like that. But it was still definitely made my prep also way harder, but it was a proof for myself. So also what I like to tell my clients is like, okay, right now I work like full-time as an online coach. It's like a somewhat, let's say, easier job to fit into a contest prep because we can somewhat, it's sedentary, it's like not super physically active. We can more or less, we can work when we want to more or less. And with like working in a bar, it was like more stressful, much more physical. And I think that is a proof like for myself, but also like, hey, I tell my clients like, yeah, if you work like this in this job, it's still possible. Like sometimes there's also that limit that where we talked before, like that limiting belief of like, oh, I work a normal job. I can't be a good competitor or like grow a lot as a bodybuilder, but it's also like totally not true, I feel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those limitations, they could really be the end of some people, right? And I'm sure we've gone through phases in our life where we've had those limitations that we've had to break past, right? You know?
So often.
And a lot of people would see us on social media. They'd be like, what? He's a lightweight world champion. Nobody would imagine that. But we all struggle with these things, right? Our way and we overcome that obstacle and that builds confidence, or if we don't overcome that obstacle and we become a victim to it, you know?
Yeah, and that's why many people stop altogether with bodybuilding. And I feel like the people who keep on going, they like beat those challenges. And I think no one has like that perfect smooth path, like moving forward. And like myself, I had tons of obstacles, like in my first 5 years with like injuries and then like also like with like with like working also like in a bar or also before in the office, there was like with work times, going to the gym like after work when I was super tired, like things like that always been like some things where, and I really thought like I had periods where I was like, oh, is it really worth it? Should I keep on going? But it's more or less like problem solving of like finding ways to work around it mostly.
Yeah. Or how to structure your day so you could get your training session in, so you're not super exhausted by the time you train, you know?
Little things some like my, that, yeah, totally.
Some of my clients who are self-employed, I like to tell them, like, if you have a super busy day ahead of you and you know that ahead of time, you should be preparing in advance by either, okay, I got to train before my workday starts, or there are some cases where you just got to suck it up and you got to go get it done after the workday. I mean, sometimes that's what's required. Things aren't always going to be perfect. You're going to have setbacks. You'll have obstacles, right? Just like Dirk said. And trying to achieve a goal without any obstacles in the way won't make achieving that goal taste as sweet, because you didn't have to fight anything in order to get there, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. Otherwise, it's like too easy. It needs to be like some obstacles and stuff to, really be happy also with it once achieving it. Yeah.
That's even a greater point, right? Because a lot of times people will achieve that goal, and if it wasn't what they expected it to be, it could lead them into, you know, a rabbit hole of depression. Or even if they don't accomplish that goal and they had the thought of, I'm going to accomplish this goal, right? They had this expectation all the way up here. Yeah. They're eventually going to come back down from that, right?
Yeah, totally. It never feels as good as we imagine it does. And it's even worse when it comes too easy. Like when we put in some work, it's like, I mean, it tastes sweet, but it's never like as good as we imagine it to be. Like that is also like a big part I realized along the journey, where I was like, oh, when you win the pro world champion title, this will be like the moment of your life. And don't get me wrong, it was a great moment, but it's like in our mind, we always imagine it even better than it really is. But also at the same thing, like we imagine like things we worry about, kind of like that they are worse than they actually are, or they actually never happen. So both extremes, just sometimes that's just with the mind, I feel. Yeah.
So what does being successful within your bodybuilding endeavors mean to you if it isn't associated with a title or a win?
I would say like for me, always a big part is like progression, like progressing. And this can be so many aspects. It doesn't need to be reps, load. It can be like, it can be so many things, like just even like having a better recovery, a better structure, a better exercise selection, or what things like that, or even having more fun during training is all forms for me of progressing. And that is like the main reason why I'm doing it as well. It's like falling in love with like progressing. It can be, it's also knowledge, experience, all of that is part of progressing, I feel. And that is like the main reason why I'm also doing it. It's like, it's endless, basically. There won't ever be a day where we will be done and saying, okay, from here, I can't progress anymore. So this is like, for me, the biggest part, I feel. Yeah.
Great points, and I love to hear it. And guys, just to recap some of this, Dirk has been doing this nearly a decade. Not only is he a pro, but he's the lightweight world champion, okay? And one thing that has been consistent through this conversation is he said he's having fun with it, okay? That's the most important thing. He's chill about it, second most important thing. Third most important thing is he just has fun progressing. He has fun learning. He has fun being more efficient with his training sessions. And the reality of it is Dirk would have never achieved some of these goals that he set out for himself if he was just focused on getting to the end goal. Because if you're just focused on getting to the end goal, you're missing these smaller puzzle pieces to the equation that eventually make up the big picture, right?
100%. 100%. Otherwise, people miss everything. If like just like, I want to turn pro. That is, and then it's all like for me as a coach, I'm like already like, okay, like let's focus on something else. Let's have that as a byproduct and not like the main goal, because it's already like we talked before, like emotional, like attachment of like, I have to turn pro. And even if you achieve it, it won't be as great. And if you don't achieve it, you will be miserable. And yeah, and you don't enjoy the process at all of like being so fixated on that end goal, I feel.
Yeah. Great points. And I learned something similar to that through experience. You know, when you said, hey, I'm sure you have clients that are like, I want to win, I want to go pro, right? And so I'll give you the situation. In my case, you know, I totally thought this athlete could win and they could go pro, right? But it's like, we missed the mark. And emotionally, they had put themselves like up here.
Yeah.
And so I guess as a coach, I could have done a better job when we were prepping to maybe like keep them a bit more humble. You know what I mean? Like, hey, yeah, you look great, but like there's other people out here that could even smash you at the show. So I think expectation management is such an incredibly important piece of our job that, you know, I mean, sometimes we'll get it right, sometimes we'll get it wrong. And it's really about like gaining enough experience to really know which competitors to like talk to in a way that doesn't have their expectations set to the moon, you know? And I don't think there's anything wrong with having expectations set to the moon, but it has to be a healthy dose of it, you know?
Yeah, a healthy, realistic dose, like you said, and then it should be fine. Yeah, so that's a big part of like being realistic with it. And yeah, and like not being too attached to it, basically. Yeah, but I think it's a good thing of having very high goals, like you said, like trying to reach there, like those super high goals. I think it can be also like a motivation, and like you may get there in 1 year or you get there in 5 years, especially within bodybuilding, things take way longer. But having that goal of turning pro, for instance, like it may take you a season, maybe it takes you 3 seasons, but someday it can, like we can, as coaches, we can see if someone is capable basically of getting there. And it depends who's showing up, depends on the right time and all of that, but yeah.
Great points, man. And to really just round off this conversation, I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast and giving the audience a little bit of a deep dive into your competition history. I think, well, this is something new I'm doing this season, as I'm bringing on a lot of athletes in addition to like some of the researchers that I speak to. So I hope that you guys took a lot of valuable gems away from this. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to hit us with a screenshot and tag us on your stories. And Dirk, is there anything that you want to leave the audience with? How can they stay up to date with you? How could they follow you?
Oh, yeah. I'm mostly active on IG, on Instagram. There you can find me at usually just Dirk Emmerich, but my username is Dirk Emmerich _. And yeah, that is the only platform I would say I'm mostly active. A little bit on YouTube here and there with like vlogs, but mostly on Instagram. That is like the main thing. And there also, if you're interested in coaching, can apply there. Drop me a message and yeah.
Go give him a follow. Show him all the love and support. And I want to thank you for coming on. And
yeah, thank me. Thank you for having me, man.
No worries. Don't forget to stay tuned for future episodes, team. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.